at a taco cart by the side of the road is a completely no-frills experience as dining goes. And if you go, you know what I mean. It's stripped down. It's open air. You have a cooler for drinks and toppings. You eat on the curb or a cement barrier. And you can find these carts on roadsides and parking lots in cities and towns across the country. The taco itself has some basic component parts, but the taqueros all put their own spin on it. And over time, you figure out your favorites. Salt Lake City has a well-established taco cart scene. And a while back, we were wondering just how it compared to the carts and the tacos in other places. So we invited Stephen Alvarez to come to the city. Alvarez is a poet and an English professor at St. John's University in New York City, and he just so happens to teach a course on tacos. Taco literacy is what he calls it. Last summer, Alvarez joined one of our producers, Benjamin Bombard, on a tour of the city's taco carts to see what they could learn.
Stephen and I started on State Street, downtown, near the intersection of 8th and 9th South. There's kind of a critical mass of taco carts there. You can walk to five of them in basically a single city block. According to county health records, it's also the birthplace of the city's street taco scene. The first carts started operating there more than 20 years ago in the 90s. I took Stephen to one of them, Tacos y Mariscos El Paisa, which also happens to be my personal favorite.
This would be pretty badass, but I could already tell. The meat choice looked really good. Buche, pork stomach.
Yeah.
And these guys do seafood. I think you probably got to try the tostada. There's the tostada ceviche. But yeah, these are the tostada. These are gigantic. And look at all these slices of meat up in here. Oh man, these guys. Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Bien, ¿qué van a comer?
A ver. Muchas.
This was the mariscos cart, where seafood is the specialty, often served up on crunchy fried tortillas called tostadas. So Stephen knew the owners of the cart were probably from somewhere on Mexico's Pacific coast. Alvarez got the tostada mixta, piled with shrimp and octopus and fish. I got the tostada ceviche, fish and shrimp basically cooked in lime juice. Then we started talking with the taqueros, the taco vendors, a man and a woman, about where Mexican immigrants in Utah originally come from.
La mayoría de los mexicanos, ¿de dónde son?
Estamos todos revueltos, ¿verdad?
So I asked him if there's many people from southern Mexico. He says most people from northern Mexico, states of Sonora and Chihuahua, where he's from, Sinaloa. That's where my grandfather's from. Sonora is from Michoacán, a little bit further south. Pretty famous for their carnitas down there. Okay. But we're having one of the famous Sinaloan-style seafood. And this is popping up all over the country. This is really, really exciting because Sinaloan mariscos are a gift. Part of Sinaloa is on the ocean.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just a fresh catch. One of the famous things is called aguachile, which is more or less a ceviche.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really spicy. And so the folks in Sinaloa, in the interior, they're really famous for roasting chicken. But on the ocean side, it's just the seafood is fantastic. It's because where he's from, it's a place called Mazatlan. It's a beach city. I mean, you're catching the fish. You're getting everything right there, right then. It's grilled. And it's just, oh, man, fantastic. And, of course, spicy.
Yeah.
Always
okay.
Spicy. Uh-huh. Always spicy.
The food at Tacos y Mariscos El Paisa was really good. After we finished eating, we talked some more with the taqueros. Felipe Acosta, the dueño, or owner, said he'd owned and operated his taco cart for nearly 22 years. He started the truck because tacos are just good business. Everybody needs to eat, he told us, and it gets all kinds of customers.
I was asking him about the neighborhood and who are the most popular customers. Mostly Mexican folks, a lot of construction around here. A lot of Latinos come here for lunch, and I asked, well, do many other folks who are not Latino come here? He's like, yeah, we get some white folks who come here, and they like to eat cabeza, they like to eat tripas, they like to eat things that are maybe a little bit off the menu.
They like.
And there is a lot of competition around here, as you can see among the taqueros, but he said they all get along and all the food is good. What makes him unique among them is that not only does he do the regular sort of beef pork tacos, but he also does mariscos. And it's always about the quality, the freshness, and the ingredients.
What are you cooking up?
Asada.
Asada?
Yeah. Everybody likes asada and pastor and pollo, chicken. More popular.
We left Felipe and his wife, Maria Elena, and as we moved on to other tacos at other carts, Stephen explained some of the philosophy behind his passion for tacos, which really comes down to people.
You learn about us when you learn about our food. And if you come here, you're going to find out who your neighbors are. and that's really important. You know, and anyway, the food is also really good. All right, so this is Rey del Taco. And they got the English and Spanish.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So that's the show today, a conversation with Stephen Alvarez about what tacos prepared in a cart on the street can tell us about the people who make them and maybe what they tell us about Salt Lake City and the way it's changing. Our conversation with Alvarez began with the basics. Just what is a taco?
Taco is, of course, it's a handheld food. And Mexican culture is actually what's called an antojito, like a small bite. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a street food. And it's a food that also is not dissociated from the people who make the food. Mm-hmm. For me, the taco starts off with just a question of a tortilla. There's layers of history rolled up in that tortilla and whatever else is rolled up inside that taco. Mm-hmm. And there's also the history of the ingredients and how that taco came to you from all these raw ingredients. And that goes into a whole other conversation. So I guess the way I think about taco is, yeah, it's a tasty treat. It's a delicious food, but it's also an object for observation, an object for study, and not in and of itself, but also to the culture that produces it.
It's as much about the people as the food, I guess.
Fundamentally, it's always about the people. I think the taco is an expression of the people, an expression of genius, actually, and like our literature as well, and our language. Our taco is our way that makes it something that we carry with us historically, that has really deep historical resonances, but also has a kind of nostalgia for the heart. And so I feel like a taco hits the head, hits the heart, most importantly, hits the belly.
How far back can you trace the history of the taco? Does it go back to indigenous food ways? Do we know? You've said that it's old culture, but how old? What do we know about that?
I'd say we go back further than the taco and really thinking about the tortilla. And the word tortilla actually comes from the Spanish, because in the Aztec and Nahuatl language, it was called laxcali. Well, the Spanish had a hard time pronouncing it, so they just called it a tortilla, something that's more familiar to them. It was like a quiche, basically, in Spain. And so to really understand that and understand that the taco itself begins with the tortilla, and the tortilla just had an all-purpose use. It was a utensil. So rolling stuff up in tortillas goes as far back as a tortilla, and that is thousands of years old. But more recent modern history, to really understand what the taco is today, and actually where some folks debate where the name of the taco comes from. Some folks say the word taco is also related to the word for a stick of dynamite, also for a pulque, tax, for example. But basically, it was during the middle of the 19th century, there was a huge migration internally in Mexico where people were moving from the countryside into Mexico City, coming from all over parts of the country. And uniquely enough, there are regional variations on these antojitos, which are these tasty street kind of treats. Well, actually, tasty treats, but when they came to Mexico City in the middle of the 19th century, they became street food, food of the popular classes. And of course, with that, Mexico City, into the 20th century, a lot of folks started coming up north and spreading all over the United States, and of course, bringing this thing called the taco with them.
Was a taco intended for working class folk? Did it ever have aspirations that were higher than that? Or was it always for the people, if you know what I mean?
I think it was more always a popular food.
Yeah.
It was the kind of food that was on the street. Now, here's where it gets really interesting, because in Mexican history, there was a long sense of shame for the indigenous foodways. The aspiration was to be something like French food. So the wealthy folks would love to have French cuisine. Yet, every once in a while, they would quote unquote slum it up and go eat with the regular folks, because whatever it is, there's always the impulse to have that kind of street tasty food. But it's always about the mixing with the popular classes where things get a little bit complicated, because the food, again, is associated with the people. And to understand that this is what those people eat, and here is what we eat. So you can also see class expressions are also a part of the way we think about food, that what rich folks eat is not going to be the same as poor folks. Now, poor folks may never have the opportunity to eat what rich folks will eat, but rich folks will definitely go into the area where the poor folks eat to have a quote unquote parachute experience, where you go back into your mansion, but you still got those tacos in your belly.
So I wanted to ask you about something that you've mentioned about how when you went to college, you talked about that, and this gets at this idea of Mexican food and this sort of class impression and this idea that it can convey a sense of pride, I guess. Mm-hmm. But you talked about how when you went to college, it was there that you discovered ways that you could be proud of who you were as a Mexican. And part of that was through food. Say a little bit more about that, because one of the things you mentioned was that you kind of had this realization, I don't know, explain it to me, that people don't necessarily love Mexican people, but they love the food. How are you thinking about that? Take me through that.
Yeah, I guess, you know, this is a question that goes pretty much the heart of my biography, my autobiography, I guess. I'm Mexican-American. Well, I guess you would say I'm third generation on my father's side. My grandfather and his family and my grandmother on my father's side left Mexico in around 1916 during the Mexican Revolution. They were refugees. My mother, I guess on her side, I would be 2.5. Let me explain that a little bit. My mom was born in Mexico, but she migrated when she was a little girl, about 5 years old. And so this term 1.5, it means like you're not quite first generation, but you're not quite second generation either. You're somewhere in the middle. The formative years were in one country, but you come of age in another country. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, I'm the first one in my family to go to college. Now, I'm from Arizona. And Arizona is a pretty tough place to be a Mexican-American. Yeah. At any rate, you know, I grew up in a little town, a little farm town in southeast Arizona. I grew up with a lot of Mormon folks, actually. Yeah. A lot of my neighbors were LDS. We were the only Mexican family. In fact, I was an LDS Boy Scout troop. Eagle Scout as well. And I used to play for the basketball team for the ward and the stake and everything.
Right. Wow.
And I went to college. I went to University of Arizona. And this is the first place where I guess I just felt scared, but also like I wasn't supposed to be there in the first place. I got straight A's and everything and a scholarship to go to this university, but I just didn't see myself there. Well, at any rate, you know, I had some buddies and we'd go down to South Tucson. Now, where I grew up in my hometown, it was the kind of tacos you would get would be more like the, I don't know, tacos dorados. So it might be iceberg lettuce and cheddar cheese.
Those are the ones I grew up with, dude. Those are the ones I grew up with.
Those are distinctly American tacos and they have their own dignity too, actually. Yeah. You know, but I would say that for me, living in Tucson and I had a friend, we would travel to South Tucson, the barrio. And then this is the first place where I had the taco that came with only onion and cilantro. And that's when I realized, whoa, there's a big part about being Mexican I did not know about. This is delicious. This is incredible. Give me more. I want to know all about this food. And so at this point, I started coming back to my mom and dad and asking questions about these different kinds of tacos I had. This carne asada and these tortillas that are paper thin that you can see through them. They're made from manteca, the great tradition of Sonoran food. And my mom knew so much. She's like, oh, your grandma used to make this and your grandpa did this. And my dad would talk about his parents. And I'm thinking, why didn't we ever talk about this? But it didn't really hit me then. I just realized like here is something that I was curious and I want to know more about my family. As I graduated, I went to grad school. I moved to New York City. And in New York City, my research primarily was literacy and bilingualism among Mexican immigrants. And so I was helping out after school programs. Mm-hmm. Most of the folks here in New York City came from the states of Puebla, so further south in Mexico, many with indigenous roots, some who spoke languages like Zapotec, those from Oaxaca, some folks spoke Mixteco, Nahuatl, language of the Aztecs. So I was meeting people who were coming as recent migrants and helping their kids with homework in English. And oftentimes the moms were so happy that I was there because you know, I came in and I was excited and I was a PhD student and they would bring me food. They would bring me tamales. They would bring me rice. They would bring me atole. And I didn't think about it at the time, but upon reflection now, that food was to say, thank you. You see my kid and I see you. And I made this with my hands for you. So these are tamales, but this is care and community. Mm. So fast forward just a little bit, then I became a professor at University of Kentucky, still continuing this kind of line of research. But it just so happened that 1 year at the University of Kentucky, it was sponsored to have a year of Mexico for the College of Humanities there. And we brought in a speaker. His name is Gustavo Arellano, very famous taco expert. He wrote the book Taco USA. So this is the man. Anyways, he came to visit and I offered to take him out for tacos. And he kind of looked at me sideways. Like, come on, man. I'm coming from Southern California.
What can you show me?
Exactly. So I took him to Tortillería Taqueria Ramirez in an area of town called Lexington, because you know who lives there, near where the horse farms are. And it blew him away. Because they were making their own corn tortillas with the same corn that comes from the mills that folks were making grits with. So these are Kentucky corn tortillas. Wow. And they're delicious. They're incredible. And so with that turn, Gustavo became a mentor and started bringing me into this Mexican food way stuff. And then it hit me. All the stuff that I was trying to do to explore Mexican history and everything else about Mexican people was a mixture of people saw us with dignity. Understand, and here is a way where people will look to my people and they love us. They love us so much. I mean, even the people who say, get the hell out of here, still love our food. And so my mission, what I realize is that there's so much that we can use as the food as a way for people to see us with dignity and to love us, but also realizing you can't know the food if you don't love the people.
Mm. I'm interested. When did you realize that it was through food that you could explore these deeper things? Mm-hmm. And what does a taco tell us about the world?
Yeah. When I was at the University of Kentucky, the food critical consciousness hadn't hit me yet.
Yeah.
Well, I was teaching a class at that time that was called Mexington, Kentucky. And so I was trying to hit all the aspects about Mexican history that was about migration to Kentucky, which relatively recent, somewhat like New York as well. And so, you know, one of the unit was about being undocumented. Another unit was about the history of the horse industry. And then at one point, the very end of the semester, we took a little field trip to the patio, the students. And without even thinking about it, I just took them to the taqueria because I think, you know, they come hang out. I'm going to buy them lunch. Same place I took Gustavo, Tortilleria Taqueria Ramirez. Mm. And even though I would say these students liked the class, sometimes immigration was a hard sell for them because they've been inculcated by a culture that had made them suspect of any kind of immigrant or why they get in line and so on. However, when we got to this taqueria and everything was in Spanish and they saw things on the menu like cabeza and lengua, I think mostly these students had ever saw tacos as chicken or beef. So they had a lot of questions. And when they got the tortillas, they were so curious about these kind of tortillas. And I realized this is it. Everything that I was trying to do that talks about migration, labor, history, why people come to Kentucky is right here in this food. And right now they are so curious. It's hands-on. They love this food. They want to know more. And through the food is going to be an easier way to get closer to the heart. And really, it's also thinking about critically the things we put into our body, the things that power us, but also those things, those nutrients and everything else that go back into people and always goes back to a kind of food ways or a system of people where food production is a part of the name of the game. And so I guess you could say, for, you know, the taco is, of course, it's a thing you can eat, but it's a thing you can think about as well.
Do you think there's a larger lesson there that if you take a people and their food and you trace it back, like you just followed the food, mm-hmm. that there would be a deeper fundamental understanding of those people, about their experience, about, you know, those larger kind of cultural questions. Mm-hmm. That is the answer, as you found, seems to be in the food. Do you think there's a larger lesson there?
Absolutely. I mean, put it this way. I teach my classes taco literacy, but I've also taught classes that are called food ways literacy.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes when students come in with, you know, not Mexican backgrounds, they ask that same question. I want to do this with my food. And I'm like, yeah, you should, because you're the expert. Mm-hmm. You can teach me and you can write about this with dignity and care. And not only that, you can trace your history. And so I'll give you an example. There's this really interesting, I'll say delicious even, chili that you can get in Cincinnati. So it's spaghetti with chili on it.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
It is a thing, yeah.
And so, for me, understanding that history, and also, for example, where some of the food that's, you know, has a German tang to it is in Cincinnati, or some of the, for example, in Appalachia, there are things called pepperoni rolls that were Italian immigrants who brought those who were working in the coal mines. I mean, it's working food, it's working class food, but it also tells a history. Now, to bring this back together for a student, to really think about their food ways might also connect them back to family members who are farmers, people who are part of the food production system. And so with the classes I teach, I often ask students to draw from their experience, their lived experiences in the micro level, and then make macro connections.
It sounds like in some ways you're teaching people to have a kind of pride in their personal histories, because inside of those personal histories are foods that we might, you know, we call them guilty pleasures, or we don't mention the fact that we really liked funeral potatoes or macaroni and cheese or some of that really sort of basic kind of food. It sounds like you're saying, no, this is part of your history and you should be proud of that in some way.
Yes and no. And here's where it gets kind of complicated. Not everybody has that positive relationship to food.
Yeah.
There are people who have eating disorders, and there are people who have been shamed for their bodies and things like this. So I would never want to always say that this is going to be a kind of thing that we should always think about. That, though, is still something connected to a personal relationship with food and with the food itself, to the people connected to the food. So I think, on one hand, investigating your personal relationships to the food that you identify with or potentially disidentify with, but really start to see your connections, the way you already thought about food, If you thought about food as something dangerous, if you thought about food as something as a nurture or nostalgia, there's a way where the food then becomes a text to be interpreted for meaning. But the interpretation first begins with you. And then, of course, we move that a little bit deeper and asking more critical questions to hopefully tease out a little bit more about the significance and maybe even reframe the question altogether to think about what food could potentially mean.
So I want to get us to the street taco scene, I guess I could put it that way, in Utah and Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
But you've surveyed different street taco, communities around the country. What are the characteristics of street tacos in different places? Do they all have the same basic components in this country, or does it vary? I mean, you mentioned the Lexington version, for example. Do they all have their own sort of twist on the theme?
Sure. I mean, first off, I guess you have to think about where the people come from in Mexico. So there might be people who come from Puebla. There might be people who come from northern Mexico, or people that might be near the ocean, for example. So where they come from, there's going to be different regional traditions of how, you know, what foods they offer. For example, finding a taco with mole is something that's kind of unique from folks in the state of Puebla, for example. Well, in this case, you can think about like the street taco. It's, well, on one hand, I guess it has to be on the street if you want to think about that. I just usually say tacos. But they're a fast food. They're a fast food. It really is. It's cheap and fast. I mean, maybe I think if you timed it, if you ordered a taco at Taco Bell and you ordered a taco at a taco stand, you can compare. They're pretty close. The sense of expediency is actually more a part of the nature of the food itself, that you can have it while you're standing up. You can have it in an informal context. And it's also, you know, it could be in an outdoor market, or it could even be, I think, in some of the taco shops that are more, you know, brick and mortar kind of style. You know, in general, the interaction with the taquero or taquera, the person who's making your food and being able to see it, is also part of the fast food nature and potentially to have a conversation. And so for me, in my own experience of everywhere I've traveled, I've had tacos all over the world. I've had tacos in China, Ireland, all over the world, and talking to people. That is always my favorite part. And I had that experience also in Salt Lake City and getting to hear why folks come here. I mean, the tacos are great, but the people who make the tacos really make it special. And if they're working on a taco cart on the street, there's a dream there. There's a dream and there's a hope there. And for me, I love to be able to speak to folks and ask them about, you know, their lives and things like that. But more importantly, you can also have conversations with folks around you too. And so the socializing aspect, I think, is really important. You know, not everybody goes there to socialize, but if you go with your friends, well, then the taco tastes a little bit better too. And more importantly, you know, if you can talk to the folks around you who maybe make a new friend, even better.
What did you make of Salt Lake's taco scene? Just basic impression. We'll get into some particulars here in a moment.
I was very impressed. And really? I say that. Yeah, I mean, I'm from Arizona. Yeah. And so I think being in the West, there's something where I just associate Mexican food with the West. I hadn't spent much time in Utah. And like I said, I grew up with a lot of LDS folks. And I think, you know, those conversations I had among the taqueros and taqueras there in Salt Lake City, every single one of them told me how great a place Utah is to raise a family. And I saw a lot of smiles. And not only that, but I also saw it wasn't just Mexican people eating at these taco trucks. There was a lot of white people, people of all different colors. And that to me was a good sign. Now, here is a place where folks can, you know, get their foot in the door to make a life. But as I said, here is a place where I'm trying to make a life. And I guess I would say that the variety of tacos, because folks are coming from all over parts of Mexico, that was also beautiful too. So you have a really rich taco scene there. And it's something, something you all should be impressed with as well.
Mm. Stephen Alvarez, he's a professor at St. John's University where he teaches a course called Taco Literacy. We'd love to hear from you, by the way, in your own taco literacy. What are your favorite taco carts in the city? What do you get when you go? And what have you learned about the people at your favorite spot? Reach out on Twitter at Radio West. We'll take a break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Need to get rid of an old vehicle but don't have time to sell it? There's an easy solution. Donate it to KUER. Vehicle donations directly support our programming, and you'd be surprised at what we accept. Cars, trucks, boats, even golf carts. Vehicle donations are also tax deductible. The process is simple. Learn more at KUER.org/vehicle.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about tacos, or anyway, the tacos you'll find at a roadside cart in cities and towns throughout the country. We invited a bona fide expert on tacos to come to Salt Lake City and to survey the scene. Stephen Alvarez is a poet and a literature professor, but he also teaches a course on taco literacy. It's not just about the food, of course, though that part is interesting and delicious. Alvarez says it's about the people, actually, who make them. His guide on his Salt Lake City taco tour was our own Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of the show. Benjamin's joining us. Ben, hi.
Hey, Doug. Hey, Stephen.
Hello.
So let's talk a little bit about Benjamin's. You were going to take Stephen around.
Mm-hmm.
You have a pretty decent familiarity with the taco scene in Salt Lake City anyway. Talk a little bit about how you were thinking about it, where you wanted to take him. What were the basic elements and the spots you wanted to cover?
Yeah, I wanted to take Stephen just kind of some of my favorites and the kind of nexus of the Salt Lake street taco scene. So we started on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City between 8th and 9th South.
Yeah.
Four taco carts have been in operation there at 8th South, 9th South on State Street for the past 20 years. Those are kind of like the first taco carts that they have a record of. Mm. Tacos El Paisa, that's on State Street on the west side of the intersection at 9th South. Then Tacos Don Rafa, which a lot of people, that's like for me, that was my first introduction to street tacos, was Tacos Don Rafa. It's been there for, you know, 22 years, 23 years or something since the late 90s. And then around the corner, just right around the corner from Tacos Don Rafa is Tacos del Toro. Around the corner is Tacos Mi Favorito, which is on Main Street just off of 8th South. So we visited all of those. I wanted to show Stephen the variety of taco carts in Salt Lake, and then to hit some different carts around the valley. So we also went out into West Valley. I wanted him to see what taco carts are like on the east side of the city, east of I-80, and then to see on the west side. And I remember when we crossed over to the west side, Stephen kind of correctly identified it as, you know, the barrio, the place where there's a greater population of Mexican and Mexican-American immigrants, and where it just is a little more diverse.
I think a lot of people are familiar with, or somewhat familiar, or maybe even not familiar, like you drive by the old Sears, parking lot. That's the nexus, right?
Yeah, that Sears parking lot. Jeff Oakes, who I was speaking with at the Salt Lake County Health Department, said, you know, there's some good reasons in his kind of reading of it why Tacos Don Rafa and Tacos del Toro right around the corner there at the Sears block there, the old Sears block.
Why they settled there.
Yeah, why they settled there. One, it was this big parking lot, which was generally empty. Sears
looked the other way.
Yeah, they looked the other way. I think they accommodated the taco cart. So you'd see signs and stuff on the walls of Sears like, you know, this is for sitting for eating. You can park here. So they really accommodated them. And
sit on that cement barrier.
Yeah, sit on that cement barrier that's been there forever.
Right.
And so you had a place to sit and eat your tacos and watch cars go by. And I remember growing up in Salt Lake in the late 90s as a high school student, one of the things you did was you cruised State.
Right.
You drive up and down State Street until they got bored of it, and the city kind of cracked down on that. But so we'd drive by Tacos Don Rafa, Tacos del Toro, and I was like, I'll be honest, like I was a little circumspect. I was a little suspicious about street food at the time. Didn't know whether to trust it or not. I'd only eaten in brick and mortar restaurants and in people's kitchens. And so I thought, can it be safe? Exactly.
Yeah.
And then one night a friend was like, hey man, you gotta try these tacos. They're delicious. They're affordable. And he was right. It was awesome. So we started there at Tacos Don Rafa. It was like my introduction to street tacos in Salt Lake.
Stephen, do you think that's a typical kind of reaction initially is for white people like Ben, who have no familiarity with it? They're a little suspicious. I mean, taco culture or taco carts seem to be more familiar these days. But do you think that's an initial sense of resistance? And I don't know what you make of it, that like, is it safe? There it is on the – I mean, what is that a typical kind of response, do you think?
That response goes as long back as Mexico and the United States have been neighbors. Let me put out another reason. I mentioned chili before.
Yeah.
Well, a long time ago in San Antonio, there's a tradition of folks who are called the chili queens. Mm. And in that case, around the Alamo, there were women who would set up these big vats of chili con carne. And of course, late at night, folks would come, maybe a little bit buzzed, a little bit tipsy, and they would have this chili. There was also a sense of sexualizing the young women who were working there, as well as exotic and women who were selling the chili. All right. Well, of course, when you have street food, later on there becomes some kind of regulation, because if you got too many Mexicans standing around white places, white spaces, we got to figure out something like that. So being in a, you know, where the Sears is, I mean, that's the kind of place where you can feel a little bit like that used to be. Maybe seen better days. That part of town is what I thought.
Yeah, that's true.
On as well. And so, yeah, of course, like this is what's keeping that economy alive, really, that particular area, that micro economy. Now, going back in Texas, there was a long tradition that folks said, you know, we love the food. We just don't want to be around Mexicans. I don't want to eat around them. Like, they might be dirty. They have diseases. How do we know that food's clean? So then there was a long American tradition of, let's see how we can get the Mexican food without the Mexicans. So one of the very first impulses to make a clean Mexican food was to put it in cans. Because you put it in cans, you don't have to see any Mexicans at all. And so there is this impulse, which not to say it was racialized, but it's because that Mexicans live oftentimes in segregated communities. And so, for example, understand, like, you're going to go into that community. Well, you might, is it safe? Is it dangerous? And so on. Right. And so there is a lot of stereotypes that sometimes get associated with food of the street because it's considered like, well, it might be dirty and so on. Mm. All right. Well, if you ever saw the food inside the brick and mortar in the background, excuse me, in the backside of the restaurant, you might be astounded as well. It's hidden. You can't see it. And here there's no place to hide it. But also on the reverse, the food is probably actually cleaner because you can see them prepare it. Mm. So there's a little bit of sort of a contradiction there. But I would say, you know, for every person who might be circumspect, there's folks like Benjamin's buddy who's like, hey, man, I found these tacos. Let's go try it out. You got those adventurous, daring folks.
Yeah.
And I think there's that side of that too. And then once you get your defenses are down, because we're sort of unfortunately trained to be defensible in this way, and you do want to protect yourself from sickness. I get it. There's a way where you can see like, well, it wasn't as scary as I thought. And the food tastes as good as I was hoping it was going to be. It maybe even exceeded my expectations. So it's kind of like, you know, we talk a lot in this country about building walls, right? More so than we need to. All right. Well, first off, walls never stopped people. They never stopped languages, and they never stopped the foods. But those walls are the physical walls. The most dangerous walls are the walls in our heads. Those are the hardest walls to break down. But when you do, then you can't go back.
You know, Doug, if I may, one of the things that struck me on our taco tour, when I was thinking about what makes taco carts unique as a dining experience, was this idea that food is a window into culture. And a taco cart is like, it's an open door. It's like you walk right into the kitchen. You're not separated from the food. You're not separated from the people making the food. It's like a direct entry into the culture. And that can be a little intimidating sometimes. You know, do I have to order in Spanish? Is it going to be awkward for me interacting in this way? I think once you just walk through that door and you don't let, you know, the walls in your mind, in your own head kind of like be an impediment, it's so welcoming and inviting and just like, it's exciting. It's always fun to go to a taco cart.
Let's talk about some of the particular places you went to. Tell us about, Ben, you start. Tell us about Felipe.
Yeah, so Felipe Acosta is a taquero who runs Tacos y Mariscos El Paisa on State Street and 9th South. He and his brother, actually, his younger brother, they're both from Mazatlan, and his younger brother moved to L.A. in the 90s, and then Felipe followed and started families there. Los Angeles, they told us, was really hard. And it was not a very safe place to raise a family. They emigrated to Utah in the late 90s, and soon after that started up their taco cart that's been in operation now for 22 or 23 years. When I went with Steven, they're from Mazatlan, and Steven can tell you a little bit more about the cuisine from Mazatlan, but it's right there on the coast. And so they have these delicious tostadas, delicious ceviche, The tostada mixta, which Steven got and which I now get every time I go there, is so fresh and refreshing on a really hot summer day. And as Felipe told us, when they came to Utah, they'd found a place and a people in the Mormons who shared their family values. So they felt very at home.
Felipe says that he gets this place because it's a place for families and a lot of Mormon people here. And he says the Mormon people have been very kind to him. They've supported him because he's a family man too. And there's a kind of mutual respect for people who love their families. And with that, he said that the Mormon people have been a great help. Some of his most loyal customers and clients and friends, he hangs out with them. And I think... Yeah, he says he found gold here. He struck gold. He struck gold. That's the way to put it. Yeah. With a family, too. Yeah, bueno.
Stephen, what do you make of Felipe and his story?
Felipe was one of the first people we met, and what a cool guy. My family also hails from Sinaloa, so he and I are both like, Arriba Sinaloa, órale. Mm-hmm. Probably shouldn't say that word. We met it as a friend. Now, mariscos, this is the tradition of Mexican seafood. So Mazatlan is one of the tops from Mexican seafood. So I highly recommend all your listeners go out there and try some of the tostadas. These are basically the flat kind of taco, basically a fried tortilla, and you can stack it up, and they do stack it up. Felipe was you know, I think it was chatting with him, and he had such a big smile. That's what I remembered as well, and him being so happy and us asking all these questions, but then really asking about his life. And this is what I was saying before. This is what I love to do. You know, go to a new place, let them know I'm out of town, speak to them in Spanish and ask them, what's it like to be Mexicano here?
You know what I found too was when I make the effort to interact with the taquero and to learn about who they are, where they come from, about their food, they really appreciate it. And they show their appreciation by loading up your tostada with extra camarones and pescado. And, you know, there's that gratitude and that sense of being seen. It's really appreciated, and it deepens the experience of eating a taco.
I will say this. I'll add this too, just really quick, because, you know, there's two guys going over here and having tacos, but one guy with the microphone. And it presents the scene like, whoa, what's going on here? And really think like, you're recording my story. And it's not just like my story matters. And so I do thank you, Benjamin, for going out and doing that. But also so folks can realize, like, we want to share our story with all of Utah. Mm. We want you to know us because I'm telling you again, we want so bad to be loved and also to understand that we came here with the hopes that we were going to find something new, but also because there's a love for this country and what this country represents and what it can be.
I think people around here, some will know that you can get a really good taco in a tire store in Salt Lake City, Victor's Tires. Ben, tell people about – well, I want to start with Stephen, actually. Was this the first time you had a taco in a tire store?
You know, I had not really seen that combination, but now it makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
I think when I first saw that, I realized like, well, it was an industrial area. It didn't look like the taco shop started first. It actually looked like it was the automotive thing. And with that, they kind of popped up and served the need for folks who want to get food for lunch and not have to go very far. And I think when we walked inside and you know, when you order, there's also stacks of tires, lots of photographs of different people, and then these gigantic trophies from soccer teams. And I realized like this, I recognize this, I know what this is. But then of course the tacos blew me away. But it was, I think being in the barrio, there's also the kind of barrio ingenuity, shall we call it, where you find a place where you can see where here's an opportunity. And also an opportunity in this case, you know, as you build community, but also realize understanding that with the growing Mexican population is where a lot of folks who are Mexican entrepreneurs make a lot of money. That is within the community itself. So oftentimes I feel like this particular restaurant is a place that had really great success, but they make sure to redistribute and also acknowledge young, you know, some of the young kids for school and soccer. So that was a really cool place. I felt like it was a taco place, but it was also a place that's a beacon for the community.
Ben, you said it was the best tortilla maybe that you experienced in your the little – a tour that you took.
Yeah, it was meaty, it was thick, it was substantial, it was really corny. It really had that deep masa flavor.
These tortillas are, they look beautiful. That's a damn good tortilla.
How important is the tortilla, Stephen Alvarez?
Oh, well, I mean, the tortilla, how do I put this? It's the canvas. Yeah. But it's a canvas itself that has its own history and tradition. And really, I guess, you know, to bring it back to some of the longer tradition, it really goes back to the processing of corn and this incredible, I don't know, serendipitous thing that happened where corn kernels fell into an alkaline solution and transformed into hominy. And so this process is called nixtamalization. And so when the corn, you know, loses its casing, it also makes it adds nutritional value, and it makes it much more easier to digest. And so this masa, which is the corn, the hominy that's ground up, is masa. And to have the fresh masa is something that can be used to make tamales, whether you steam them, you can put them on the griddle over a hot fire and turn it into a tortilla, roll it up. I mean, there's other places where folks will use these, and they'll shape them into like little boats called chalupas. You can have these, different ways you can prepare the corn, but the corn is always going to be the vessel. But the corn goes back to Mexican culture in the sense that we all call ourselves the people of the corn. In the sense that corn can't grow by itself, it has to have human intervention. But also the corn supports the growth of ancient societies. I mean, there are some historians and also anthropologists that point out that once the process of nixtamalization was uncovered, that this is when we started having sedentary societies and also where civilizations began to be built. I mean, literally to build some of these great gigantic monuments we see throughout all Mesoamerica. So the corn is fundamental, and the tortilla is an expression of the corn.
Stephen Alvarez, he teaches English literature and a course on taco literacy at St. John's University in New York City. Also with us is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of the show. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the city's taco scene. You must have your favorites, the types and toppings. What do you get when you go? We're on Twitter, at Radio West. We'll take another break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
KUER is proud to be listener-focused and listener-supported public radio. We're grateful for our community of donors and sustainers who make monthly contributions to the station. If you rely on our programming to stay informed, become our newest sustainer with a gift of just $5 a month. Or consider an increase to your existing contribution. Get started today at KUER.org/donate.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. We're talking tacos today on the show with Stephen Alvarez, a poet and English professor. He teaches a course on taco literacy. He's with us along with one of our producers, Benjamin Bombard. Ben, what do you – you've talked about the fact that you think there's this kind of ebb and flow in the taco cart community, I guess, in the city anyway. What are you seeing in terms of – the future of taco carts and the sort of that street taco culture, I guess. There are a lot of food trucks now. I'm wondering what kind of influence that's having, what impact that's having just in terms of basic competition. But also then there's this question, of course, this ongoing question in the city right now about gentrification. Mm-hmm. So where is taco culture headed as far as you can tell?
Yeah, so Salt Lake started with these 4 taco carts, more or less, right? At State Street and 8th and 9th South, around there. That number has since grown in the past 20-plus years to about 25 taco carts and about 50 to 75 mobile Mexican, Hispanic, Latinx food trucks, food carts, food trailers, et cetera, of a fleet now of 300 mobile food businesses in Salt Lake City. And that expansion and that growth in the mobile food business has been aided by laws passed by the legislature in the past 5-6 years, I believe, to make it easier to get a mobile food business up and running, kind of following on the heels and the success of mobile food businesses in places like Austin and Portland, cities that Salt Lake, I think, kind of has aspired to emulate and to kind of grow like and to resemble in ways. So there's been this great growth, right? And that has allowed people to enter the dining scene with low overhead. It's not cheap to get one of these up and going. A food cart can run you $3,000 to $10,000, depending on the level of customization. But it's not nearly as expensive as a brick and mortar business. Yeah. And that has allowed people to serve the food of their own culture, whether you come from Somalia or Senegal or Cuba or Jamaica. And, you know, or in Salt Lake City now, there are food trucks representing any number of cultures. I didn't, in talking with the taqueros, there wasn't a sense of competition. There was a sense of kind of mutual support, that we're all in this together. We're all serving the best food we can. It's his business, and it's a hard business. It's a very demanding business, of very long hours. You know, they wake up to get going, start cooking their food at the commissary kitchen that's regulated by the counties where they have to cook and prepare their food. So this food is clean. I think that's changed. That perception that street food may be dirty has been kind of redressed by the growing popularity of food trucks and the predominance of them. I worry, you know, to your point that I've been born and raised on the east side of Salt Lake City, and I've watched in the past 10 years a kind of dissolution of Mexican, Hispanic, and Latinx food markets and restaurants on the east side of the city. There isn't – I have a hard time thinking of a Mexican or Hispanic or Latinx food establishment east of State Street in downtown Salt Lake City right now. Those four or five taco carts there on State Street at 8th and 9th, they kind of are the remnants of where you can go in downtown Salt Lake City to get really good Mexican food. Those areas in downtown Salt Lake City in general are being redeveloped rapidly to account for the growing population and to address housing shortages. The Sears block, where Tacos Don Rafa and Tacos El Toro have been for 20 plus years, that block has been due for redevelopment for years now. It remains to be seen kind of when that redevelopment will take place. But I'm a bit concerned that when and if that does happen, you know, will these taco carts be allowed to stay? Will they be given the space to run their business, for people to park, for people to continue to eat there, where Tacos y Mariscos El País is, where the Acosta brothers run their cart? That's a kind of derelict parking lot, and it has been for years. Will that be redeveloped? Will these taco carts be allowed to stay? I sure hope so. I think it really enriches the experience of living in Salt Lake City to be able to have a broad array of dining experiences on hand. And this is delicious food served by really wonderful people. And I hope that the city accounts for that and takes that into consideration when these redevelopments take place.
Stephen Alvarez, are you seeing a national trend either way for taco carts in the United States?
Sure. I mean, well, first thing is, of course, gentrification. That will be the process by which not only are the taco carts gone, but the Mexican people who live in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Or rather, we call that dispossession. And so the good thing, though, these carts are mobile. So they will find another place. But sometimes finding that place, like Benjamin said, where the parking is available, maybe good lighting, and they feel safe. And also, that's where your location becomes part of your recognition. Mm-hmm. And then also, there could be potentially areas where folks are saturated. I mean, I have no problem having six taco carts in one street corner, but also you can imagine what that does. There is a sense of competition in the sense that, you know, if you make something unique, folks will come to you, and you make a good name and brand recognition and so on. But still, you know, there's always the fear or the threat that you may have to move and go somewhere else, which is a story of migrants done told right there. I mean, having a small business, but also knowing that you have no rights and it can be taken away from you at any time. And that's also like the reality of the situation, unfortunately. I wouldn't even say that when redevelopment happens, I would guarantee that those taco carts will be the first things gone, besides the homeless people who live around the corner as well. I mean, that's just kind of unsightly, quote unquote. But also it's understood, like, well, why don't we have a brick and mortar restaurant, Mexican restaurant? We like Mexican food, but we want something where, like, you know, folks can sit down or something like this, maybe bigger menu.
Okay, we're out of time, but I want to finally just say, and do this quick, you guys. Just give us a sense. Somebody comes to you and says, I've never had a taco at a taco cart. How do I do it? Ben, you start, and then Stephen, you can have the final word.
Ask for a pair of tacos with the carne asada or the chicken, And then
start basic.
Start basic. Yeah. Start with something simple. Ask about the condiments and ask what you should put on it, because some of that stuff's hot. Depending on your level of spice tolerance, you may like get more than you bargained for. I know I have. I can be a bit of a spice wimp. And then step out from there. There are lots of options on that menu, and don't limit yourself to just the safe options.
Yeah. Steven.
I like the way Benjamin put that. I guess, you know, start with what you know. And for me, I grew up, Sonora is where my mother came from. And so carne asada is something that's like, I just always remember. So that's my default taco when I go somewhere. It's just the one I just always have. You know, I like al pastor too. Yeah. But I think what Benjamin is saying is it makes sense. Start with what you know, and also maybe start expanding out a little bit. Oftentimes, I often ask the taquero, what's your favorite taco? And what's the taco you like here? And also, what's the most popular taco people really like here? But sometimes you might encounter a menu and you don't recognize some of the things because they might only be in Spanish. Don't worry, my friends. You can take a photo of the actual menu and you can go do your research. And then you can expand your taco literacy and really think about what you're going to be eating. What is tripas? How do they prepare that? Ah, suadero? Very interesting.
Cabeza?
Lengua?
All these things. And then, of course, once you start knowing about it, researching about it, the food tastes so much better.
Steven Alvarez, he's a professor of English literature at St. John's University in New York, and Benjamin Bombard, he's one of our producers. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And we'd love to hear your own thoughts and experiences about tacos and Salt Lake's taco cart scene. Do you have a favorite? What do you get when you go? And what have you learned about the people at your favorite spot? You can reach out on Twitter at Radio West. Our intern is Andrew Christiansen, the show produced by Kerry Watson, Benjamin Bombard, and Tim Slover. Stephanie Allerton is our executive producer. I'm Dr. Breezy.